Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is a commentary episode, so we are watching Season 7, Episode 14, Sleepover of NYPD Blue, while recording Season 7, Episode 14, Sleepover of NYPD Blue Balls. So you might want to be watching the episode as you listen to this podcast. However, you don't have to if you don't want to. Anyway, NYPD Blue, the show, is on Hulu and Amazon Prime. However, Hulu has the more updated syndication versions, which is HD upscaled, and Amazon has the original format, and it looks a little grainier and a little worse. However, I think they don't have edited copies of episodes, so you take the good with the bad, whichever version you want to watch. Anyway, thank you for listening. I'll have more to say at the end of the episode. But I can't thank you enough for even spending a moment of your time listening to NYPD Blue Balls. Anyway, let's start the show. One, two, three, go. Hello, everybody, and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. We're watching Season 7, Episode 14, Sleepover. Kind of a weird
title. I don't remember this episode, but I is the sleepover factor in?
I don't think it does. It's a confusing one. It starts with a home invasion, possible kidnapping, because some gentleman broke in and stole some shit after the man of the house left for a doctor's appointment, and they believe they broke in using his key and then took him and the missing car. Because the husband never made it to the doctor. Also,
again, I said this before we started, but I feel like I've seen this white man on the couch in a lot of things. I just can't put his face in on anything.
Well, his name is Madison Mason, and I thought the same thing, but I thought it was his voice.
I because he has two first names.
Madison Mason?
Yeah, and they're like douchey, you know?
Well, he definitely has the face, voice, and name of a man who could be in the Senate for 40 years, who does horribly racist, horrible things to people. You say you feel like you've seen him before. It seems like he just did a bunch of like small parts on TV shows, but has been around for a while.
Yeah, that's probably it. That's like just, you know, a character actor.
But the one thing I noticed in his IMDb that was interesting, he was on a couple of Key and Peele sketches.
Oh, which ones?
The one that I found after looking into it. He played one of the senators. There was like this sketch where Obama would say things that every other person would immediately disagree with.
Okay.
So it was literally a sketch where Peele as Obama would be like, "We need to make sure that the rich pay no taxes." And then Paul F. Tompkins and this guy would go, "I disagree." And he's like, "Okay, so the rich pay their taxes." And they're like, "Oh my God, what is he doing?" But yeah, he does have a look that's like senator.
Damn, so wait, he was in a Key and Peele sketch?
Yeah, he was in a few.
How old was he here?
How old was he here? Well, now I have to do some math.
He looks 65.
Hold on. He was born in 1943. He's still alive. Shit, 43. When was
that? Just me, or was that a long opening?
It was a pretty long opening. It takes its time.
We skipped over a lot of things, like how bitchy that woman is.
Yeah, the guy we're talking about, he's the head of security for, like, a business woman.
But isn't he the head of security for the woman's father and mother?
No, he's the head of security for her.
For her, okay.
For her and her company. Also, this is the opening of the show. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever.
Man, fuck all that noise.
And, yeah.
We're 6 years into it. We're 6 years into it. Just explain what's going on.
You have to do it. Every episode could be someone's first.
If someone started NYPD Blue on like this episode, they would hate the show. So I hope they would not do that.
But essentially, that guy that looks like we've seen him 1,000 times before, he's the head of security. That businesswoman is freaking out about her parents because her mom is now, you know, needs a hospital, and her father is missing. This is great because it is John explaining to Medavoy how Zen gardens work.
Yeah.
And it has one of my favorite lines from Medavoy ever, which we're going to get to pretty quickly. I don't want to spoil it, but when he gets the tiny rake, he starts raking the sand, which apparently he does wrong. But he says the phrase, "Do you think... you sure this works for non-Orientals?" Which is just perfect Medavoy. Because he doesn't mean any ill will, but it's just such a stupid question.
Do we think David Milch was still a part of NYPD Blue at this point?
Yeah. I mean, he has some story by credits.
I just finished Deadwood again, and they love using that word in Deadwood.
Orientals?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the time.
Yeah, I know, but it's just funny. Like, it makes you, like, look back and go, like, huh, is that a David Milch moment or a Bosco moment?
So this woman shows up to the precinct, and she is concerned because her housekeeper, Rafaela, just let her know, like, her baby died. And she's like, but we didn't have a funeral. I didn't get to send flowers. I'm so concerned. And Jones, almost like from the jump, I feel like Jones is like, I know this woman. I've seen this woman before. This is all fake concern because of some grievance she has with this woman.
This is holier than thou, white savior helping.
Because he eventually just gets to the point, he's like, how do you know Rafaela? It's like, it's my housekeeper. And he's like, was there any prior, you know, issues you may have had that may have caused you to come in? And then she says the phrase like, well, you know, I was always raised that we treat the help like family.
That's the shit that makes me funny. That makes me laugh when people say shit like that.
We take a look, we're looking after their care and welfare.
Yeah, sure you are.
Also, this woman, a slight famous face, I thought I recognized her, and I did, but for the weirdest reason. This woman plays Aunt May Parker in the Spider-Man game that came out recently that was super popular.
Really?
Yep.
Interesting. I don't remember that.
She also apparently started out at the Second City doing a lot of comedy and improv.
Oh.
And I'm going to guess that she just does a white Karen...
really white, well.
Rich Karen well.
I mean, it's not hard.
But it's also funny how he's like, do you think she will accuse you of bringing this up because of things you think she stole? And she's like, you know how fiery and how, what would you say, emotional they get?
That's my favorite trope. My favorite, like, one of my favorite stereotypes is, like, just that people of Latin descent are fiery.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've been with Maria a long time, and she's had many emotional outbursts that I've seen.
Yeah, she's the loosest of cannons.
She's like Ernest Rides Again, just one big loose cannon, and that's a joke for five people.
Like, yeah, I think I'm the one who, I'm the one who's always having to calm her down when we go out.
We did skip over the part where she says to Jones, like, I feel like we met in maybe another life, and then Metaboy's like, hey, where do you think you met her? And Jones is like, I think there was a lot of cotton. And then Metaboy's like, ooh!
That's a good one. That's a good joke.
I just love how immediately uncomfortable he gets. Right now, Sip and Sorensen are running down the old people.
Can we ask like a real question right now? Do we think any person of color is writing for Jones right now?
I don't know. Probably not. Maybe not. But I mean, with saying that. I don't think he's written stereotypically or poorly.
No. I think they try really, really hard with him. I really do. I think when, as the seasons go on, I think they try really, really hard to be more progressive about him and, like, his storyline and stuff, which is great, but it's just kind of funny.
Well, the same thing with Fancy. Like, Fancy's always been pretty dope.
Yeah, but I feel like they gave up on giving Fancy any storyline his last, like, year or two, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of
true. I feel like he was involved, but I don't feel like we got to know him. Like, if I remember correctly, like, I don't think his wife comes back. Like, I don't think, like, you know?
Yeah, or his kids.
Yeah, like, things like that. Didn't he have a whole thing where he, like, was helping a young boy, you know? Like,
Yeah,
it was just shit like that where it's like, they kind of like let Fancy, like the story of Fancy kind of fall off for other people, which is fine. But, I don't know. I like Fancy. I thought him in the beginning as a counterweight to Sip with was always good. And I liked that, like, Simone wasn't his, like, counterweight all the time or, like, his opposite. It was, like, other people in the precinct, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Anyways, you missed the whole fucking thing here, so you can explain it.
Well, the whole point of this scene is they're running down what they have for Fancy, and Sipowicz is just, like, blowing up on everybody because he's, like, anxious about this security guy who used to be a cop who's being browbeaten by this businesswoman, and he's like, that's what's going to happen to all of us. We're all going to get security jobs, and it's going to be filled with women like this. And everyone's like, why don't you calm the fuck down? Like, we have a job to do today.
He's just freaking out, that's all. He sees the end coming for him, you know?
And they get a line from Uniform that they found the car, and I guess the security guy has a radio somewhere because he's on the scene before they get there. But it doesn't look too good. Because wouldn't you know it, there's blood in the trunk, and there's
he ain't nowhere to be found.
And there's a pair of glasses inside.
Mm-hmm. How can he see, Kirk? How can he see?
I also love how Sipowicz, he's like, are those his glasses? And the guy goes, yeah, and he goes, this guy's dead. He just says it like, this guy's dead.
Hey, Sipowicz, I know you've been on the team for a while with some bedside manner, dog. Like, Jesus.
And then the woman shows up because I think the head of security called her, and she's like, I want to see the car. And they're trying to prevent her from seeing it because it's not going to make her feel any better. But she's got that hair pulled super tight into a bun.
Super tight. It's not that tight. There's a little bump in the front.
Well, that bump occurred because she's technically mourning. if she was in business mode, it'd be right up against her head.
So she loosened up the tension a little bit.
Little tension loosening. She gets back on this guy Avery Batch, who they found out is like on the liver list. So there is a possibility that she's just racist and picked out the first black man she knew had any relationship with her parents. She's like, "Did you get that hoodlum Avery Batch?" It's like, yeah, he's not moving around because he can't. So this woman, Rafaela, and kind of a turning point in this story, it started out as Medavoy and Jones's case, and then Kirkendall and Russell are just here.
Which, I mean, are you against this move?
No, it's just odd because, like, they seem to be a part of the case, but they, like, because the whole show is you get little pieces of the case, you investigate, and then they run stuff for Fancy and then run stuff by each other. But this one, it's like the women show up to talk to her, express their opinions, and that's it. They're gone. You know what I mean?
Well, because I think, which I agree with, if this is their thought process on it, this woman, Rafaela, is going to speak to Kirkendall and Russell easier than Jones and Medavoy.
Mm-hmm.
Which I understand. I get. I'm feeling that.
She basically,
I don't even want to talk to Medavoy.
Like, yeah, I mean, makes sense. But she essentially says she was kicked out of working for that group because the husband in that couple stole shit for his gambling and then forced himself on her. And then when the wife found out, she blamed everything on her and told her to get out like a dog, she put it. And then they start asking about her kid, and Raphael is like, my friends took him. No, my friends took him. My baby died, and my friends took him to bury him in the country.
That's always my favorite one. My friends took him.
My friends took him to bury him in the country. And then they're like, "Do you have any more info, like, other than that?"
Yeah.
And she's like, "No." And they're like, "Well, we're going to talk to your husband, Roberto." And she's like, "Why?" Well, she doesn't say why, but she gives a look like, "Why would you talk to him?" I'm like, "Well, we have to." So she gives up where he works. JB.
Yeah, I'm.
JB.
It's been a while.
Full on high, JB.
He's good as a junkie, dude. You can't deny that.
No, he's great at it. Like, after watching a flagrant amount of Intervention, I can confirm he does a great job. And you gotta turn down your side a little bit, because I can hear him yelling.
We went over this. This is what the test was for.
Yeah, but he wasn't yelling at that time. Anyway, Sorensen gets pissed because he's high. JB is like, "I have information on the break-in and the kidnapping." So Sipwitz gets it out of him. Basically saying, "I know the guy that called him and he was involved. I can bring him to you if you'd like." And he's like, "How much do I get?" And I said, $200. And he's super excited because he can get $200 more of drugs.
Wow, that's a lot.
Well, I don't know. I don't know the going rate, and I don't know the inflation, and I don't know what the drug costs were at this point. But yeah, you're right. I mean, JB does a great job. It's weird how when he's like a junkie, he's a great actor and it like lands. But when he's like sober, he's just annoying.
Fair. I just don't like that, like, Sorensen keeps giving him like side eyes and shit. And it's like, yo, bro, you promised him like the world and you've like not helped him.
Well, yeah. We'll get to it later in this episode, but he bears this guilt for not getting him studio time, even though he has admitted he's never heard him sing.
Yeah, but you can't promise somebody who has an addiction something, and if they do it, you'll get them clean. Like, you can't say, hey, help me with this, and I'll get you your studio time, which will help you stay clean, what you're trying to do, and then you go and say, then not do that. And then expect them to, like, stay clean and sober and, like, still be good. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. The thing I don't get, my sense of injustice, is how Sipowicz and Russell and Danny's girlfriend, if you can call her that, by how he treats her. All of them are like, oh my god, what are you even freaked out about? Like, he's a druggie. That's what they do. They do drugs. Like, they're all so shocked at the idea of caring about somebody who is an addict. And it's even more ridiculous because both Russell and Sipowicz have drinking problems.
Are addicts, yeah. No, 100%.
So it's like, what the fuck is the difference, guys? Because what he does is illegal and what you guys did was legal? Come on. Get it together. Also, that shit where JB is like, do you know what a keto means?
Yeah, you like that?
That shit's great, because I just imagine a druggie doing that to a guy. Before he gets his ass kicked by, like, an angry driver. What I want to know, how did this...
Hey, that truck driver is a recurring face. He, I don't know if he comes in a later episode, but he is on another episode of NYPD Blue.
Well, that's super dope.
Anyway, sorry.
I didn't recognize him. Also, and then Danny collars him for drugs, and he's so mad.
I know he has to collar him for something, though, because...
he can't make it look like he set up the other guy.
He can't screw the other guy's cover. He can't screw the cover, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. Can I ask you a question about this guy? Because this guy's entire scene is like, my wife gets pregnant when I'm visiting Mexico. She says it's his boss's baby. And now I have to work hard to take care of it? No thanks, not going to do it. It's not my baby. That's his whole attitude. But I need to ask you this. Does this fucking dude look like a Jonas brother?
I mean, I don't know the Jonas Brothers that well, but...
Because when this dude showed up, I was like, that's a fucking Jonas brother. And then when I found out it wasn't, I was, sad. Because it looks like a Jonas brother.
He's somebody.
No, he's not. I looked at his IMDb. I don't know him from shit. I thought it was fucking Joe Jonas with his purity ring.
Yeah, but, like, Joe Jonas would have been, like, 4 years old at this time.
Loving Jesus. And hating rock and roll to explain what he's done.
No, they love it now, though. They're okay with it. Like, they've come to terms with being in love with Jesus and being able to, like, make music.
So this is probably one of, like, one of the saddest child death stories that NYPD Blue could have.
Again, has to be true.
You think that Bill Clark or somebody else heard a story where this is true?
Yeah, it has. To me, this feels like a story that somebody this has to be true. That's just my opinion.
I wanted to give props to Ruth Levere. LIVIER. She plays Rafaela. She does a great job. Because you get the sense from her wife, or no, her not her wife, from her husband, that dude's like, not my baby, let it starve.
Not my baby, not my problem. He's so like a lot of conservative Christians.
Hey, I care about that baby up until it's born, and then once it's breathing its own air, who gives a shit?
Gives a fuck. Ain't my problem. You shouldn't have got pregnant.
And you know what? We're gonna take all food off of food stamps.
Unless it's like fucking KFC or some shit.
Lard. So this woman basically, that's what confuses me about this story. It seems like she took the baby and just left it on a hill and then watched it die.
Yeah.
Which, how can you do that? How, like, I'm not even...
Well, from the way she describes it, pretty easily. but, no, she actually does, I think she does a pretty good job of, like, showing, like, super, like, I don't know, like, she has, in a way, like, think about it, dude, she has to grapple with the fact that, like, she was basically raped, had a baby, like, it has to, like, grapple with these, like, feelings of, like, wanting to be a mom, and then at the same time have to relive her rape every day. So, like, I don't know, like, I get, like, she doesn't physically kill her child, you know what I'm saying? Like, she doesn't, like, put him in water or, like, you know, it's not at her hand, but she doesn't, like, take care. I don't know, it's weird, it's fucked up, but, like, I don't know, like, I've never had to bear a child from rape, so I don't know, you know what I mean?
I'm just, like, thinking of what would it take, how can you sit there, because I, like, let me put it this way, I don't take care of babies now, never have.
Yeah.
But I...
Never will.
Don't think I could ever just sit there while a baby dies. Like, I would try, and it's not even mine. You know what I mean? Like, fair. I just couldn't sit there and watch it.
Again, Kirk, but, like, you didn't push that baby out of your vagina after being raped. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think we can...
Well, no, I'm not, I don't know, because this is a fictional character situation. I'm just saying, like, because babies cry, like,
Oh, boy.
Like, you're just going to sit there and watch it? It just seems impossible. Like, a person that drowns their baby, it's horrible and horrendous. To me, it's like, okay, well, that's a horrible thing you do, and then it's over. But like,
watching your baby cry, I don't get it. Drowning your baby, I'm on board.
I'm not on board. I understand.
Makes sense.
Never mind. I'm already a monster now. Doesn't matter. But it just didn't make sense. This guy. Also, did you recognize this guy? I kind of recognize this dude.
No, not at all.
This dude is on Antonio David Lyons. He's in American History X.
Didn't know that.
He's also in Hotel Rwanda.
Nope, didn't know. Sorry, I don't know ADL's IMDb page.
But essentially, he gives up that they accidentally killed the guy because his boys wanted to steal the car and then steal the guy's shit, and he's got to back up his boys, and then they just left the body out in the weeds, as he put it.
That's crazy. Like, just to be like, okay, this went south. What do we do? Just let's dump him here. Like, it's crazy. Isn't that weird? Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I couldn't be like, hey, let's just dump a body somewhere. No. Now, here we have a...
Good to know. I don't call on you when I need help for something.
Something. Here we find out there's no way to find out if that dude is the father of the child, that Rafaela gave back to God, in her words. Here we have Jill's two cents about how you don't kill your children. You just raise them with a known asshole drug dealer. Kaka!
Yeah, what a crap. I don't care what you do. I don't care what you do with your children. You don't kill them. You raise them in a shitty house where they may become murderers and sociopaths. That's what a real American does.
Let's not judge Kirkendall. Not yet. Hint. Anyway. So here, this fucking dude. This guy comes in and he is bitching out so hard.
No, he's not. He's not bitching out. I think he's just finally like had a moment of like, I don't know where he can like. He's like gotten to like. Like, let everything go and, like, talk to, like, two men about what he's really feeling, you know what I mean? Instead of being bossed around by this woman all day.
Well, yeah, I mean, in his own words, like, this woman intimidates the hell out of me. And he's like, the only thing she liked was taking care of her mom and dad, and now she doesn't have that at all. And she's gonna hold a grievance against me. And they're like, you're gonna have to tell her, dog. And then Sipowicz is just like, you're telling her.
No, that's good. He needs to tell her, like, he works for her, for fuck's sake. But, like, at the same time, like, I get it. Like, she seems fucking horrible.
Yeah. She seems like her hair has never not felt tension.
I feel like she's had that same haircut since she was, like, 4.
I feel like her day planner has an entry for organizing her day planner.
I don't know, I feel like that's something you do, so... I feel like people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, but...
I actually don't. I don't even have a day planner. I just have anxiety. So this is where Danny reveals... His whole plan was just to get JB arrested. So that... You okay there? You pouring some ice? You making drinks there, cocktail? What are we doing?
Sorry.
We got Tom Cruise.
hanging out of planes.
Danny reveals he was just holding JB until he could take him home with him so he won't use. And then this happens, which is weird, which is Sipowicz offers to let a police officer drive with her to her mom. Why?
Courtesy.
But couldn't she drive with him? Her head of security?
That is weird.
Well, apparently the head of security is going to go check out the body. She's going to go back to her mom. That's why they can't do that. It just seemed weird. He could have dropped her off. It just seemed odd to do that. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if he just lets her... If having her go with the... the cop lets her just go right away to her mom. And then he can go take care of the body. Takes care of the business. Mm-hmm. Which she's all about. So it's best of both.
I hate this part because
I really like JB as an informant, and he's a good informant, good actor, blah blah blah. But this scene really bothers me because he keeps saying the phrase "my free choosing choice," and I fucking hate that. I hate that phrase, and I don't know why. Like, it just really bothers me that, like, those are the words that he decided to keep on using. I don't know why, but
I love and hate this scene because JB is doing a great job being... Because he's going to have withdrawal, and it's gonna suck ass. And basically, Danny's like, nope, you're gonna come live with me so you won't do drugs. And he's like, man, fuck you. Like, I did what you asked, and now you're gonna make me feel like shit tonight.
Fuck you for caring about me.
And this is great, because the second he walks in, he's like, hey, you want me here? implying that it might be her place too.
And it is a good. I do like that as like an opening, as like a hello.
You want me here? And then he calls her lasagna. Smells like throw up, which makes me think she must be a shit cook. Because what lasagna smells like vomit?
No, we've established that she's a pretty good cook. By that scene where they sat across from each other eating her like big ziti and that the stellar acting performance.
You're right. How could I forget? Also, it's also great. There's a line that made me laugh out loud, and we're gonna get to it. But basically, Danny, like, runs this dude around the apartment. He's like, go to the bedroom. Now come over here and sit down. Now run to the shower. Now take a shower. Now run to the living room.
But you just got a new puppy or some shit.
But he's explaining to his girlfriend, like, I'm sorry, the woman that cooks for him that he kind of treats well occasionally. He tells her, like, if he doesn't do this, the guy will be in the wind. And she's like, I thought we were having dinner like normal people. And she says, he's like, make me a plate. And she's like, so you can make sure he doesn't go out the window. And he goes, yeah. Like, duh. That's what we're doing. It just made me so, it made me laugh so hard. It was like, what, do you want me to make you a plate so you can watch him so he doesn't go out the window? Yeah. Get with it, Mary. Oh, man.
He's an interesting dude.
It's also, like, because...
I think interesting is the word.
Because I double-checked that Amazon, and there's his dick. For some odd reason, he just comes out of that bathroom naked.
Well, I have to rewind. I didn't see any penis.
But,
oh, yep. I see a little bit of that tip.
But what makes me laugh about, this is Danny's like, look, this is just something I gotta do. And she's like, you could have given me more warning than I'm bringing someone over for dinner.
No, yeah, that's fair.
Like, this is a much bigger deal than a friend for dinner.
No, that's fair. Like, especially, like, yeah, like, I'm just bringing a friend. Like, what?
There's a lot loaded in that.
Yeah, there's a fuck ton loaded in that.
And then he makes the comment, he's like, because the guy's like, are you going to let me leave tomorrow? And Danny's like, well, I can't make you stay here. And he's like, are you going to let me leave? And he says, yes, I'll let you leave. And he's like, okay, fine, then go to your bed so I can sleep. But, yeah, we know JB is going to be gone in the morning.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be there. Like, I mean, I get Danny, like, caring and shit, but, like, he does not want to be there. Like, as he'll probably get, like, a little bit of sleep, and then he's gone.
And right now, I have a question, because this scene transitions into what looks like bedtime. Right?
Uh-huh.
Are they not going to eat?
Yeah, what happened to all the food?
She made a lasagna. What's happening with that?
Yeah, that's odd, dude.
Like, I was sitting there, like, I think the second time I watched this episode, I'm like, who's eating the fucking lasagna?
Wow, that is weird. That is weird.
And then this scene, I think, is supposed to explain that Mary realizes, like, oh, Danny just cares for this guy and wants to do right by him. He's so sweet. He's such a great guy. I'm going to tell him I love him. And because he's so emotionally cut off, he goes, thanks. I'm going to go give him some wet towels.
I mean, in his defense, like, read the room.
And then she cries.
Like, is this right now the best time to do this? Like, I don't know. it was. I mean, it was a weird time to do that.
Very odd time. Here we have Metavoid bitching because he's going to go on a run with a guy that looks like a model, and he's going to look like an albatross, which I don't even know what that means.
This is a big white bird.
Ah, yeah, he will.
Remember the movie The Rescuers?
Oh, that was an albatross.
The big white bird. Rescuers and The Rescuers Down Under, I think they both were on albatrosses.
And Jones, being a cool dude, he's like, do I owe Jill an apology? And he's like, no. And Jones just straight up is like, yeah, it's because I hate those fucking rich people.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not. They are 100% partial. Well, not. I won't. They're highly responsible for what happened to this woman. Basically, fully responsible. And.
Oh, 100%.
They're going to just get away with it because of how it pans out. They talk about how they can't change life, but they want to hail the train conductor. And then this fucking bitch. I think this is just very well written Karen bashing. Because it's basically Metavoy kind of takes a step back once it gets actually started. Because Jones reacts to the baby is in fact dead, and he's like, "That's right, bitch. You don't want to look further." And then she takes the time to be like, "What in your experience says what I should do?" And then he's
Metavoy gives the greatest like,
"Oh boy."
He gives the greatest like white guy like I do this a lot where like when other white people say shit, I just like, I'm like, okay, say that if you want. Like, this is on you. This is, you're starting this battle, not me. Yeah, like, you're starting this, not me. Like, prepare. I don't think you're ready for what's about to hit you, Miss Whatever.
Yeah, like, I'm not gonna join. Well, it's also great because she says, look, she is a slut and a thief. And she's like, and obviously it's been refuted. And he's like, it hasn't been refuted. It just can't be proven. You want to give us your husband's DNA? Then we'll fucking prove it. And then she kind of's like, oh shit, that would do it, huh? He's like, yeah, but you're not gonna, because you're a fucking hypocrite bitch. Because he takes the extra step to call her a hypocrite on the stairs.
Yeah.
And because of that, she goes for a Karen slap, and then he gives her the look of like, hey, you just assaulted a police officer.
It's weird that Metavoy doesn't make a move. I'm not saying like he needs to do anything, but like even when her hands like go up to swing, like he doesn't even flinch, like, whoa, what's happening? You know what I mean? Like, isn't that weird? Or am I just being a weirdo?
I think it's because Metavoy knows she's going to. I think he's just like, let's see what he's gonna do.
He's just like, fuck it, dog, let's see what happens.
I think Metavoy knows, like, dealing with that person and the situation. He's like, what? What am I gonna do? And then he...
why does he train conduct, dude?
To refer back to the conversation they had in the locker room, where it's like, you just wanna hail the train conductor. It was a bad time.
I know.
He should have walked.
I know, but like, come on.
He should have got to Baldwin and it was like, hey, are you okay?
Yeah.
Do you still want to run? Do you want to chase down that bitch and hogtie?
Yeah.
I mean.
Or been like, white bitches, am I right?
He's like, white bitches? Oh, I divorced one. Horrible.
White bitches, God. I have. Three of them in my life. I don't talk to them all.
That. But instead, he was like, hoo hoo! Get on the train!
That was a weird one.
It was very, very strange. But I do think that there was kind of like a moment where Medavoy is like, well, I can see where this is going, and I'm not involved. He's like, I'm gonna follow.
Another very white thing to do.
I'm not involved. I'm gonna follow Jones's lead, and if Jones wants to pursue this until this woman's in cuffs, that's what we'll do. But I'm following him. Anything else about this episode before we close up?
No, not at all.
I like
JB.
Oh yeah, JB.
I mean, we're bringing him back for a reason. Foreshadowing.
Yeah. JB played by Jeff Cahill, who actually died. The person, he died in like 2013. He was only 44.
That's a bummer.
That's a bummer for him. Also, shout out to that Karen lady, Nancy Lanari, who played Aunt May in the Spider-Man game. She does a good job at being
Cable.
Oh,
the Spider-Man game. Okay.
Yeah, the Spider-Man PlayStation 4 game.
Yeah, she looks exactly like her.
That's what she was doing lately.
I see.
But yeah.
She was getting in on that.
That Madison Mason dude, I'm like, I could guarantee I've heard that dude's voice like 1,000 times in some shit. He has like a very good voice for that kind of shit, but,
yeah.
That's it. Sleepover.
What does it have to do with sleeping over?
No, I don't know.
Oh. JB.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. Like the whole like last like 15 minutes of the show.
I thought it was a very, very cruel reference to what the baby was doing.
Wow. And I don't think you're trying to be funny.
I'm not.
I was like
sleepover. I mean, she took the baby out for 2 nights, but they wouldn't name
that
it kinda, that.
That was kind of like a sleepover, right?
that's horrific. but then you mentioned JB, and I'm like, oh. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
I forgot about that.
That guy actually sleeping at his house.
All right. If that's it, if we've already shown ourselves to be horrible monsters, that's it for Sleepover.
Thanks again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the podcast wherever you are listening to the podcast so that, you know, it gets higher up in the algorithm and hopefully more people end up watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. There's a couple of books out there about NYPD Blue. If you just need to scratch that itch, there is True Blue, written about the first couple seasons. There is What Would Sipwits Do, a collection of articles about the show. And then there's Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. If you like watching public domain movies or watching people play video games and enjoy my voice, you can head over to twitch.tv/KirkHasGlasses, where I'm watching public domain movies on Monday nights and playing video games Sunday mornings and Wednesday evenings. NYPD Blue Balls is on Twitter at AsherBrosPod and on Instagram at AsherBrothersPodcast. It's mostly just mentioning when new episodes are out. Thank you. Have a good one. Be good to each other. Peace.